Second case today is United States v. Nguyen. Appellant ready?
Yes, Your Honor.
The government?
Yes, Your Honor.
Appellant may argue.
Chief Judge Stuckey, members of the court, may it please the court. My name is Captain Alex Hess. Mr. Jonathan Pyre and I represent the appellant, Staff Sergeant Michael Nguyen. May I have 3 minutes for rebuttal, Your Honor?
Granted.
Your Honor, Article 66 mandates that in every case, the CCA ensure that the sentence is both correct in law and appropriate. Without considering whether and to what extent the confinement facility's policy unlawfully increased the sentence, however, the Army Court had no way of knowing and therefore ensuring that the sentence was correct in law and appropriate in this case. As such, the Army Court did not conduct a valid Article 66 review, and this Court should remand for consideration and resolution of the appellant's claims. Your Honor, correct in law, as this Court stated in White and Irby, is the duty to determine whether the prison officials unlawfully increased the severity of the adjudged and the approved sentences.
Well, didn't they consider, they, the CCA, consider the Eighth Amendment issue, which would seem to be directly on point, that what was the severity increased, i.e., was he punished unconstitutionally? So, what's the problem?
Your Honor, so the problem is they did address the Eighth Amendment claim below the CCA. However, they also raised the First Amendment, the Fifth Amendment.
Well, does the CCA have a duty under Article 66 to explicitly consider any complaint that a prisoner can shoehorn into some sort of constitutional argument?
Yes, Your Honor. They do because Article 66 mandates in every case that they conduct the correctness in law and sentence appropriateness review.
Well, and what's correct in law? If it passes Eighth Amendment scrutiny, it seems to me that that's dispositive, isn't it? You're talking about punishment. You know, what's the amendment that's on point for punishment? It's the Eighth Amendment. I mean, you make some sort of argument about the First Amendment in here, but candidly, well, go ahead.
Well, we would point to this Court's decision in Pena.
So what?
In Pena, Your Honor. Pena built on White and Irby talking about how an unlawful increase in the severity of the judgment approved sentence can render a sentence incorrect in law. And in Pena, this Court first considered the Eighth Amendment and Article 55 claims, but then separate and apart from that, considered separately whether, as a result of the due process violation, the sentence had been unlawfully increased. And the Court there said we would look at the Mendoza factors that the Supreme Court discussed and that this Court applied in Fisher to determine whether what was happening was an additional punishment. The problem is the CCA didn't conduct any of that sort of analysis. And so there was no way for it to fulfill its obligation to ensure that the sentence was correct and law.
Counselor, your position is that an infringement of other constitutional rights, significant rights, could very well result in an increase of the sentence. Is that?
Yes, Your Honor.
And how do you respond to the government's position that, oh, wait a minute, our case law steps aside only those issues dealing with the Eighth Amendment and Article 55. And they say Article 55 and Eighth Amendment violations are just different. And they go to, as Judge Stuckey has suggested, to the punishment. I think that's good. I'll ask them when I get up. And I don't want to put words in their mouth. But that's how I understand their brief. How do you respond to that?
Well, Your Honor, there is the correctness in law piece of it, but there's also the sentence appropriateness piece as well. We think this fits under both. The First Amendment and Fifth Amendment claims can fit under both. Basically what happened in this case, the prison facility said you cannot have any contact with your children under any circumstances. And that is an increase in the severity for his sentence vis-a-vis other prisoners confinement who aren't dealing with that.
Does that render it inappropriate? I mean, that seems to be conflating. Sense appropriateness goes to the sentence as a judge. To me, we should be very cautious and treading into these waters of prison administration, because it can become a morass, as it has become for some courts. Judge Sparks makes a good point. We've never really pushed this thing beyond the Eighth Amendment, Article 55, have we?
Well, specifically with respect to sentence department, if I point to United States versus Gay, in that case, the CCA found there was no Eighth Amendment Article 55 violation, but nevertheless, they found a legal defect in the post-trial confinement conditions related to the solitary confinement, and they awarded sentence appropriateness relief in that case. So, sort of similar.
Well, we don't really review their sentence appropriateness considerations, and they've got a very broad mandate to tinker with sentences in any way they please. We don't. Gay was decided, that was an Article 12 case, as I recall, and was decided on that basis. But anyway, go ahead.
But this court obviously doesn't have sense appropriateness power, the CCAs do, but this court does have a responsibility to ensure that the CCAs are not using an improperly circumscribed standard when they conduct their Article 66 review. And our position is that if the CCA does not consider a claim put before it, there's no way for it to know whether or not the sentence was actually appropriate. And we point to this court's decision in United States versus Fagan, the 2004 case. In that case, this court said you cannot skip the analysis of the legal error that's presented as part of the record and raised by the parties before applying your sentence appropriateness powers. And that makes sense because if you don't understand or you don't analyze the nature and the extent of the legal error, how can you know whether or not to apply your discretion to grant sentence appropriateness review or how much credit is available in that case?
Your position goes kind of to the nub of the case here, which is simply, look, you are making the claim on its merits at this point. You're saying the CCA has said they can decide whether to or not to. And your argument is that, well, no, under the statute in our case law, is that you must. You do not have the discretion. Is that a correct summary of your position?
Yes, Your Honor. So this court, even if we go back to Brastafon, this court has said the CCAs must consider the issues. The problem in this case is that they sidestep consideration of the issues, essentially because they believe that this could be raised in federal court. And an alternate remedy was available in an alternate court, and therefore we're not going to consider that. But as this court said in Jesse, policy considerations about which court he could go to is not what we look at. We look at the language of Article 66. And this court has interpreted Article 66 to say that in every case, you must ensure that the sentence is correct in law and appropriate. And you can't do that unless you actually look at the legal error itself.
So from your perspective, what is the minimum that a CCA would have to do in terms of checking the box, saying we've done this, as reflected in their opinion?
Your Honor, I think the CCAs know how to say that we've considered an issue and we've decided it lacks merit and does not warrant discussion. In fact, they did that, I believe, in footnote 1 of the main opinion in this case. What's very different here, especially if you look at Joint Appendix 10, which is the denial of reconsideration, they use very unique language that we are not going to address as part of our Article 66 review. And we think that that reveals the juncture at which they weren't analyzing this claim, and that was while they were reviewing the record and analyzing it. In fact, that's what the dissenting judge even says, sort of what was going on behind the scenes. But to the extent that there is any confusion of whether or not this was considered, in Beyer, this court said that, if it's not clear even whether the court has applied a proper standard, the correct remedy is to remand for consideration using the correct standard. So all we're asking for, Your Honor, I guess to sum it all up, is consideration of the claims. Because without that consideration, it can't know whether or not the sentence is correct in law or otherwise appropriate. The whole discussion about this belonging in federal court, frankly, is sort of a red herring. What this court has to apply is what Article 66 says. Schlesinger versus Councilman, the Supreme Court said military courts are expected to vindicate the constitutional rights of the accused. To say that we don't consider an issue because possibly he could go and seek an alternate form of relief, injunctive relief in the federal court, that directly contradicts the language of the Supreme Court, or even this court, what is said in Loving, that a possible Article III form of remedy is not an adequate remedy at law. Article 66 is a broad mandate that was not fulfilled in this case because they did not consider the issues.
Let me ask you this one question about the merits, somewhat the merits of the claim. In other words, all of the reasons cited by the lower court about why they are not going to consider the claim, would those be matters they could reach and decide upon in determining whether or not relief was granted? In other words, if we said, no, send it back, CCA, you must consider these constitutional issues, and they consider them, would they be able to, or would it make sense for them to consider all of the things they raised as reasons before for not considering as on the issue of a remedy?
I see, Your Honor. So,
does that make sense?
Yes, Your Honor, I think so. We think that would still be an abuse of discretion under that.
Where
to take that approach? Well, because, once again, Article 66, whether something can be found in federal court is completely divorced from what Article 66 mandates that they do. In every case, they have to ensure that this is happening. And they can't be assured the sentence is correct by saying, well, potentially he could go down the road to Alexandria.
Well,
counsel,
if I could just ask a question, your notion of sentence appears to be incredibly capacious. Right?
I didn't hear the last word, Your Honor. I'm sorry.
Capacious, large, gigantic,
yes,
capable of expansion beyond anything that I understand a sentence to be. So how is it that we can do as you say without requiring the CCA to decide issues related to prison rules and regulations that have nothing to do with the sentence that was adjudged?
Well, if we're talking about correctness in law, Your Honor, I think, as the Court talked about in Pena, what is normally a collateral condition of confinement is being imposed as punishment after analyzing the Mendoza factors, then that doesn't unlawfully increase the severity of the sentence.
But once the CCA has said that this is not an Eighth Amendment or Article 55 violation, how is it that you shoehorn this in to punishment or to the sentence being appropriate or inappropriate? And for example, it seems to me that under your analysis, if long after the person had had their sentence adjudged, someone was serving their sentence and they requested to shave their beard or to grow a beard, and a prison official said, no, you cannot do that, right? That under your analysis, rather than bringing a RFRA claim, they could say that the sentence was not correct in law or fact. Am I wrong?
Well, I think there we would run into sort of a Jesse issue potentially with whether or not this is actually part of the entire record at that juncture.
So let's say prophylactically, he's raised this issue to the CCA in his post-trial matters because it's happened before his sentence has been finally approved by the CA. So this is before it's gone to the CCA.
Yes, ma'am. I think in that case, sentence appropriateness is obviously a broad mandate for the CCAs, and they can decide, you know, there might be many reasons why a legal deficiency in the confinement conditions might warrant a form of relief. So I think it would be a very fact-intensive analysis for that, Your Honor.
But I hear you saying that as long as they raise it and phrase it as a constitutional violation, that it therefore necessarily impacts the question whether the sentence was appropriate. Am I misunderstanding your argument?
Well, Your Honor, I think what we're saying is if the constitutional claim in this case, essentially, is that there was a legal defect in the confinement conditions that did relate to the sentence, that did make it more severe in the sense that he couldn't have any communication with his children. And so that was something that had to be considered by the CCA since it was raised in the matters.
But it only needs to be considered for the CCA if it's in fact, I mean, if your argument is very circular.
I don't think I heard the last part, Your Honor. I'm sorry.
I said it seems to me that your argument is circular.
No, we don't think it's circular, Your Honor. And that's simply because the sentence appropriateness piece of this is a much broader form than the unlawful, in the incorrectness in law aspect of the argument, Your Honor.
Okay, so perhaps on rebuttal you can explain to me why the scenario that I raised, which has to do with failure to permit your client to grow a beard, right, raised the convening authority, and now he wants to claim that it violates his First Amendment rights and therefore should be considered by the CCA in terms of whether his sentence is appropriate.
Yes, Your Honor. Pending any further questions from the court?
I just want to make sure I understand your position in light of Judge Bryan's question. I think what you seem to be saying is, hey, look, they consider all this and come to that very conclusion. Right? So you're just asking them, hey, look, do your duty and consider this constitutional claim. You could decide it has no merit. You could decide it has merit with no remedy. You can decide whatever you want. I think that's what you're saying, isn't it?
Exactly, Your Honor. Huh. It's the lack of consideration that makes this the problem.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Judge Ryan?
I have no further questions.
Thank you, counsel. Counsel for the government.
Yes, Your Honor. Chief Judge Stuckey, Judge of the Court, and Police of the Court, my name is Captain Christopher Layden, and along with Major Brett Kramer, I represent the United States. This Court should affirm the CCA's review in this case.
Could you speak up a little?
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
This Court should affirm the CCA's review in this case because this Court's precedent gives the CCA's discretion in whether to resolve post-trial confinement complaints that do not rise to the Eighth Amendment or Article 55 of the CCA. And the CCA did not abuse that discretion when it determined that this particular prison complaint is unsuitable for its review. This court...
Yeah, Marie, let me ask, I hate to jump in too early here, but you've got a lot of time. Do you disagree that there are potentially First Amendment or Fifth Amendment claims that could in fact impact on the sentence appropriateness? In other words, that could potentially support an argument that the sentence has been increased.
Yes, of course, I do believe there are scenarios or hypotheticals in which a First Amendment or Fifth Amendment violation is absolutely so egregious that it rises to the level of an Eighth Amendment violation. And in such circumstances, it has been viewed to not be an abuse of discretion to consider it as an unlawful increase. Not yet in the military court system, but I can envision a scenario where something was absolutely so over the top, so brutal, so intense in the way it deprived someone of something so essential, or with such a malicious intent in the way it was done, that it could, in fact, become an Eighth Amendment violation.
I understand.
So if that's the case, why doesn't that open the courthouse door? Why doesn't the CCA then say, anything that falls below that, perhaps such as the facts in this case, there is no relief that will be granted, but you have the opportunity to present that claim. That's the point I think Judge Sparks was making.
I understand, Judge Olson. And I think the answer is because this Court's precedent has never required the CCA to do that. And this Court's precedent has been very clear on one thing, and that's that the Eighth Amendment in Article 55 is different. And it's because it relates to punishment. It deals squarely with the sentence of a court-martial, and the Article 55 UCMJ brings the Eighth Amendment directly into the UCMJ, therefore it brings it directly into Article 66. And it makes that review mandatory. This Court held as much in its decisions in 2001 in United States versus White and United States versus Irby.
Okay, but in Gay, and we find there that the confinement condition, the solitary confinement, did not rise to the level of Eighth Amendment violation?
The Air Force CCA did, sir, yes.
So, and we said that was permissible.
This court said it was not an abuse of discretion for the Air Force CCA to find the legal deficiencies tied to that prisoner's individual treatment, which smacked punishment, and created at least three legal deficiencies visible in the manual for courts martial. It was not an abuse of the CCA's discretion in that particular case to grant, to consider and grant credit for the way that individual was treated.
So again, though, I think it's very important that we draw the distinction between opening the courthouse doors and providing a remedy. If, in fact, in Gay, we said it's permissible for the Air Force CCA to find that relief was warranted based on a non-Eighth Amendment claim, why hasn't the courthouse door been opened? And why mustn't it remain open? Even though the CCA may decide, such as in this case, that no relief is warranted. How can a CCA otherwise perform its required duty to determine the appropriateness of the sentence?
Your Honor, I think the answer is that operating within the parameters set by this court, the CCAs are going to catch anything that comes close to the Eighth Amendment or Article 55, anything that bears on punishment as part of their automatic 66 lens, which has imported Article 55. So whether the talismanic language is there or not, in reviewing a complaint, what I really mean to say is in reviewing a condition, the CCAs have, and they did in this case, and they did even more deeply in a related case of the CCA of Jesse, they dug into the condition itself. And in Jesse, they didn't even allege the Eighth Amendment or 55. But the court unpacked the regulation itself, excluded the possibility of an Eighth Amendment or Article 55 violation, and then said, quoting White, Irby, Pena, and Gay, all cases I'll get to in a moment, it said, we view the CAF's guidance to say we need go no further in resolving other post-trial confinement condition complaints where, for one of the reasons, it doesn't make any sense for us to do it at all. And among the other reasons listed, there is a place for them to go and get the appropriate relief. The only appropriate remedy for a policy that oppresses you is an injunction. And it's to pursue the opportunity to get out from underneath that policy. And that's one of the rationales provided in Jesse, seconded in Gwynn. This court then developed a little further, as my colleague says, built on the White and Irby case law in 2007 with Pena, which was an Eighth Amendment allegation related to mandatory supervised release programs in prison. And again, after excluding the Eighth Amendment or Article 55, this court said, the door is open to the possibility that such a program could, in fact, unlawfully increase a sentence if shown to be punitive rather than regulatory in nature. And so I think
how would a court know that before examining that, at least in a cursory manner? That's why I think it's so important to draw the distinction between letting them come through the courthouse door and make the argument as compared to whether relief will be granted.
Yes, Your Honor, it would be this court's prerogative to make that case law today if that's how it's thought fit, but operating under...
Well, you're saying terms of case law, but if we've got a situation where the statute says that the CCA is required to engage in the sentence appropriateness review, and we've got a case like Gay that says that you can have something that doesn't rise to the level of an Eighth Amendment violation, and that the Air Force CCA had the ability to look at that, how could they determine the sentence appropriateness as is required unless they at least take a look at it?
The government's position is that they are taking a look at it, Your Honor. They are just not using
it. But here, the CCA explicitly said, we're not going to take a look at it. This is inappropriate for us to even consider it.
That's correct, Your Honor. It said it is inappropriate. Well, it said we are not required to do so, and we choose not to, in the exercise of our discretion, because we view applying a First Amendment or Fifth Amendment lens to this complaint to be inappropriate for the following reasons. So I do believe it's important to set up that they are, in fact, engaging the condition complaint of. It is getting its due punishment lens scrub automatically after 2001. But in Pena, it put a little bit of meat on the bone and said, where there's a flagrant punishment, even if it doesn't specifically hit the wickets of an Eighth Amendment or the 55 complaint, it may still increase the punishment. And I think that is also what's critical in Gay in 2006, where the court found, well, it was not an abuse of discretion for the CCA to stray from the Eighth Amendment and Article 55 a little bit, because that was a scenario involving an airman who was arbitrarily sent to maximum security solitary confinement at the behest of chain command. And so doing, if I could just read a very quick piece of this court's opinion today, in reaching this conclusion, we do not recognize unlimited authority of the CCAs to grant sentence appropriateness relief for any conditions of post-trial confinement of which they disapprove.
That's talking about the relief. That's the point I keep making, the difference between relief and the ability to get through the courthouse door. Let me change the focus for a minute. You're just talking about injunctive relief as being the appropriate approach here. The defense used the term double-dealing in its brief. It says the government is engaging in double-dealing on this issue of the proper form. What's your response to the defense?
Your Honor, there I think it's very important to examine what is the appellant actually asking for. And in this case, there wasn't a double-dealing. There is a consistency between the Government Appellate Division's argument and the Justice Department's argument. The problem is, in Gwynn, he pursued the wrong form of relief in Article III courts. He submitted a habeas petition in the wrong court, I might add, and he was pursuing specifically sentencing credit, a reduction in the sentence, and monetary damages. The government submits that if he had asked for the right relief in the right court, the litigation analysis would have been very different. But he didn't. Because he technically asked for a thing that could hypothetically be issued by the military justice system after Gay, he had an exhaustion.
And how did he get damages through the military justice? Two questions. One, in Gay, did we say Air Force Court, you're required to do this, pat him on the head, or do we just say Air Force Court, it's not an abuse of discretion for you to do this without requiring it?
Exactly, Your Honor. It said, this court said, you have not abused your discretion. But nowhere in the opinion of Gay is there a requirement. And importantly, Gay involved something in the flavor of the world of punishment. It was individualized treatment of that service member. Here we have an administrative prison policy applicable to all child sex offenders. And the court is well aware that First Amendment rights are among the most infringed in prison. And yet he invites this court to decide his complaint of the First and Fifth Amendment within the structure of a system that lacks the authority to stop the policy. And
no, he didn't. We're getting into all this Article III stuff. He didn't ask for an injunction, did he?
No, Your Honor.
He asked for damages in tort?
In the federal district court, he did.
Okay, he asked for federal, in federal district court.
Yes.
Okay. Correct. All he asked here was a reduction in his sentence.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Right, which, of course, the CCA can do.
And where the government's accused of double-dealing is simply by us pointing out he's asked the same thing in two different places. And so that's what invites the exhaustion doctrine. That was simply the government's position on that.
Can I ask you a question, just stepping back a little bit? Does the government have a position on whether White and Irby and the entire line of cases that suggest that the CCAs can review post-trial complaints about post-trial confinement conditions are correctly decided? In other words, does the government have a position on whether that White is correct that you can consider Eighth Amendment claims in post-trial? Eighth Amendment claims that the sentence has been unlawfully increased as opposed to just deciding whether the sentence itself that was adjudged and approved is correct.
Yes, Your Honor, and Your Honor stated in the Jesse opinion that because both sentence appropriateness and correctness in law requires determinations based on the entire record, we need not determine whether post-trial confinement conditions fall under one or both. So I think it's fair to say that it's actually an open question which one these types of complaints even go to, if any, practice of law. I would submit that they would go to sentence appropriateness. And as Chief Judge Suki said during oral argument in Jesse, that's CCA's and it's not this court. And so,
but you're not questioning whether White is good law.
No, Your Honor. No, Your Honor. I would submit that this case, it does present an opportunity for potentially some clarifying guidance of Gay, and the government would offer, unsolicitedly, that that it further narrowed the CCA's discretion when departing from Eighth Amendment and Article 55 review, and at least make clear that they are not required to do so. The Air Force CCA was found not to have abused its discretion. I think Gay can be cabined off because it is a very close call. While it did not rise to the Eighth Amendment, it could conceivably, in another court's view, have possibly crept into Article 55 violation just because of the individualized treatment of that individual, the fact that he was put in solitary confinement at the behest of his command. It smacks of punishment. And the legal deficiencies cited by the court, there were three of them, they all relate to punishment, sentence and punishment. And so it was a fairly close call. Article 55 expands the aperture a little bit of cruel and unusual punishment to give service members a little extra protection for this court's decision in White and Matthews. And so potentially cabining Gay in a way that is clearer to the field that the CCAs absolutely do not have to and potentially should not stray outside of their Eighth and Fifth Amendment punishment lens.
Counsel, if you don't mind, I have a question. I suggested to appellant's counsel that under their analysis that the definition of sentence would be incredibly malleable and capacious. Can you speculate as to a way to cabin that? Do you understand my question, which is if sentence includes anything and everything that a prison official might decide to do, how do we limit that?
I think I understand your question, Senior Judge Ryan, and I can see the argument that sentence and cruel and unusual punishment means in the sentence. It's a prohibition against ordering someone into leg irons for the rest of their life. But the court's case law, the Supreme Court case law, which this court follows, and the precedent that's generated thereafter has limited to things that, they deprive you of something specific. And so I guess, and also, and typically with malicious or capricious intent on behalf of the jailer. So I don't know that I'm answering your question completely, but I think I would say to tighten the left and right limits of the Eighth Amendment more closely in line with the Supreme Court and to hold that to actually increase the sentence would have to be very closely, the punishment itself would have to be very closely related to the sentence. And I'm not aware of any case law where a service member has been sentenced to something in the record of trial, literally itemizing something cruel and unusual. But the treatment has to be individualized. It cannot just be a service member who disfavors a policy. And so I would just suggest that when we talk about sentence and punishment, that there's a very close nexus, and that's the extent to which this court should demand or even encourage CCA review.
Thank you.
Any further questions of the court? This court should affirm the Army Court.
Thank you, counsel. Does the appellant have a rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor. If I'm following the government's argument, the government appears to be drawing sort of a new line in the sand and creating a new rule about certain things don't have to be considered anymore, whereas certain things have to be considered. And the question is, where do we go from here with that? I think if we take that approach, then suddenly it becomes a question of, well, what other issues don't the CCAs need to consider? And our case law, again, going all the way back even to Grossman matters, is that anything that is raised in the entire record and briefed by the parties, raised as an issue, has to be considered. And that has to be done so that they can fulfill their statutory mandate to ensure the census correct in law. In fact, we shouldn't start drawing new lines where we've never done so before and don't need to do so in the future.
Judge Ryan has a point. If anything a prison does can be shoved under the rubric of sentencing, and under the rubric of sentencing, the CCA has to consider it. Isn't this simply a roving commission to do good in penology? And that's not our job.
No, but it is the CCA's job to consider whether, in light of potentially, you know, forcibly shaving someone's beard, I think was the example that was given, that is a additional form of punishment that's being imposed on this individual, and in light of that, whether the sentence still remains appropriate.
Well, okay, you know, take the government's point that making a differentiation between the individualized treatment of a prisoner and a rubric of general applicability. If everybody has to shave, and nobody objects to it but one guy, then what have you got?
Well, I think it's up for the CCA to consider whether the punishment, whether that is being applied as a punishment to this individual in a way that makes it more severe in that individual case. The problem is, unless you actually consider that issue, you can't know it. And that's the fault here that the CCA did not do. They simply can't be assured.
Well, and here we have a roving commission in penology. But anyway, go ahead.
Again, all we're asking for, Your Honor, is consideration of the matter.
Could you reply to the government's discussion of the Gay case, where the government said, well, we didn't say today that you had to consider it, we just said it wasn't the use of discretion to consider it. Could you reply to that?
Yep. Your Honor, so if we look at the language of Gay, I think what the court said is the CCAs have discretion on whether or not to grant relief. And again, it goes to whether or not to grant relief. And in order to know that, our position is you have to actually look at the issue. Gay never said you know, some issues you have to look at, others you don't. It was just a matter of reviewing, and I see my time's about to expire, but it's just a matter of reviewing. The discretion comes into play. It can only be a knowingly applied discretion after you've actually considered the legal issue itself. So we don't think Gay actually says you have the discretion of whether or not to consider an issue, it's whether or not to grant relief.
So can I go back to my question to you then? So is it or is it not your view that any complaint raised by a prisoner must be considered as part of the sentence appropriateness review?
Yes. It should be considered, Your Honor. And to be clear, consideration, it could be that the CCA does what it does in footnote 1 and say, look, under Gin Factor 1, this is simply, we don't think this is anything. We dispose of it out of hand. But at least in that case, they've considered it. They've looked at the merits and made an informed decision about
what... So they raise the issue, there's an equal protection violation because only men can shop on Saturday and women have to shop on Sunday. And so no matter how frivolous that claim is, they must consider it.
Yes, Your Honor. They have to consider it. And consider doesn't necessarily mean write a large opinion about it or anything like that. They can say out of hand, this just simply does not have any merit. We're not going to grant any relief. It's the consideration that matters, Your Honor.
And how are they going to decide whether it has merit without getting into the intricacies of the penological rubric?
Well, I think they would look at it depending on the issue under the equal protection or whatever it is. And it might be obvious just from the face of it that this is simply nothing. And that's fine, Your Honor. They can make that decision.
I understand your position.
So in other words, the supposition I made at the beginning, which is that if it can be shoehorned under some constitutional rubric, there is a duty to consider it.
There is a duty to consider it.
Thank you.
In order to apply the discretion.
Right.
Thank you.
Thank you. Cases, court thanks counsel for both sides. Case is now submitted. Court is in recess until 09:30 tomorrow.